This is Jason Albert, and you are listening to Nordic Nation from Faster Skier. First, a shout from the episode sponsor, the Craftsbury Outdoor Center. Craftsbury is excited to kick off the 2020 season. So excited, they are offering 30% off select early season dates. Go to craftsbury.com/NNpod to save 30% off of your trailside lodging, including bountiful fresh local food and all your skiing on the center's man-made and natural loops. They currently have 25K open. That's craftsbury.com/NNpod, and make sure you enter that all in lowercase. Okay, back to the episode. We know the World Cup is just days away with an opening sprint in Ruka, Finland. After watching Devin Kershaw last year commentate on Eurosport as he assisted with some of the 2019 World Championship coverage, we knew he would be a go-to for a World Cup preview. Kershaw is based out of Lillehammer, Norway, and as many of you know, he is a former Canadian standout skier. We spoke to Kershaw last week as he was studying for a university exam back in Oslo. We start off the conversation with his thoughts on the unfolding fluoro wax debate. But one of the things I wanted to ask you about, and I know the wax issue has been like a big thing here in the US in terms of the EPA starting to enforce regulations on certain fluorinated compounds. And I know that's also been a topic in Norwegian sport. Living in that country, is that something people are discussing, you know, not regularly, but like it's on people's minds?
Oh, for sure. I think it's to be honest, I feel like it kind of comes in waves in a way, which is seems kind of strange, but for sure it's discussed. I mean, the biggest problem is they work so well, you know, so that's what gets discussed a lot is, you know, there's a lot of companies, Swix being the biggest one here in Norway, but waxing companies, they've been doing a lot of testing for the last half decade at least to try and find something better. And they're just not able to find anything faster. And this creates an issue because, well, I mean, we could get into the whole ethic of it on the lower level of competition. That's one thing. But on the highest level of competition, I mean, like people are going to use the products that give the fastest skis. And man, there's going to be a lot of inertia there, I think, if you try and ban fluorocarbons at the elite level, at the World Cup level. I really, really feel you already have trust issues in high level skiing right now with some countries, and our sport sadly has a spotted doping history with certain nations and stuff. And if you all of a sudden say that you can't use fluorinated waxing, I'm just not totally sure like a Norwegian ski team would believe that the Russian ski team aren't using it, or vice versa, or the Americans and the Canadians, or you know what I mean? It's going to be a complicated time with that. But I mean, I think what is the most complicated with the rule changes, like you said, is what happens when companies within Europe or the United States are banned altogether from producing this sort of product. Then what's going to happen? Are you going to have a whole bunch of, is it going to be like a meth lab or like a MDMA, like a pill press lab where people are making this crazy fluorinated stuff in their basements? I don't know. It's hard to know. I don't know. It's going to create an issue.
All right. So on the World Cup, and we can kind of take this a couple of different ways, but one is holistically, we'll kind of think about, there's a lot of racing this year and it is a non-championship year, meaning there's no World Championships and there's no Olympics. And I'm curious from your perspective, you know, how did you approach those types of seasons and what might be different entering a season like that compared to a season where you may be tuning up for an Olympics or World Champs?
I always loved the non-championship years. I mean, I mean, the Olympic gold medal, like an individual Olympic gold medal, of course, like reigns supreme in the eyes and hearts of North American athletes, just because, I don't know, we're conditioned that way. But you know, like the overall World Cup is, man, what a competition, really. Because it's a war of attrition, and you cannot have that many races that are suboptimal if you want to compete in that competition. And in a season like this with so many races, and there's not that many people that can compete to win the Globe, but those that are, it's full gas and high pressure from day one to the end. I mean, a missed weekend with sickness or falling flat at the Tour de Ski, these have like dire, drastic effects on a season where all the best skiers are gunning to win the Globe. So it is those years without championships are the kind of marquee years for who is the best skier in the world, really. Because, I mean, it's one thing to be the best skier in the world on a day. And, I mean, I'm not taking anything away from that. I think it's an amazing accomplishment. And
sure,
that's something pretty special.
There's a ton of racing this year. I think off the top of my head, maybe something like 40 races.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, right. Like, does that number sound kind of, like you said, like kind of crazy?
Yeah, it is.
Or, okay, why is that? I mean, I sort of loaded question there.
No, it's not that loaded. I mean, I think, like, I understand in some ways, like, I understand that when there's no championship, you can really fit a lot in. But at the same time, when you do that, you're really riding that fine balance between, like, a lot of these competitions are going to be watered down because you can't be at the top of your game from 40 races throughout an entire season, traveling to North America, traveling to Europe. I mean, it's just not going to happen. So you're going to see some of these competitions and some of these competition weekends they're going to be thin, like really thin. And quite frankly, I don't think that's great for the growth of the sport internationally. I think we already are struggling. I mean, there's a lot of articles written about that. There's a lot of discussions that Norway, for example, dominates, or Norway, Sweden, and Russia dominate cross-country skiing, and you're losing interest. And there's some problems with holding interest or sponsor growth and this sort of thing. And then is the answer to put even more races? And then that really makes the biggest teams have even that much more of an advantage because they have deeper teams. You know what I mean? So it's like their B team can still win. Whereas like if the US needs to rest one race weekend and Canada aren't even sending people to some race weekends and other teams as well are in the same boat, then all that's going to happen is it's going to make that dominance seem even more complete. And I don't know. So I think there's too many races, no question. There's too many races, and I think we could structure the race weekends a little better. We always compare to biathlon, and that's, I know, not the best thing to do, but how biathlon have more competitions in single venues, I think you could have 3-4 races in 5 days kind of thing. Let's say 3 races in 5 days, and then take a weekend off here and there, and make those World Cup weekends kind of mean more in a way, so they wouldn't be watered down, so everybody would show up and compete. So but at the same time, there's a lot of things that play. I mean, FIS has a very, very strange organizational structure when it comes to the World Cup circuit. It's ridiculous. I mean, it's a ridiculous structure. So there's, when you have those sorts of politics, of course, certain countries want to have competitions in their countries, and then when there's no Olympics, then it seems to me that FIS kind of goes like, okay, everyone, you get one, you get a race, trying to keep everybody happy. And what ends up happening is having this calendar with like 40 races on it, which is, it just means some races will be like World Cup lights, you know?
Right. No, I do know. And I know that, like, you know, depending on the country, that can serve an athlete well, because, you know, maybe you're on the cusp on the US squad and it's a better opportunity to score World Cup points and a lot of the criteria, sure. You know?
Yeah. But at the same time, I see that, like, it can really kind of make or break an athlete's opportunity to make a team for that last rung, like grasping at that last rung of the ladder that's oiled in butter. Maybe it's a little stickier, so you kind of stick to that last rung. But if you really want international success, I mean, getting a top 15 in a competition that has 8 red group skiers in it, you know what? When the World Championships come to town, or the Olympics come to town, or Holmenkollen comes to town, like, oh, you're 15th at a race that had 7 red group skiers in it, you're not going to be able to hide when 30 red group skiers show up. you know, not, then you'll be 43rd, just like every other weekend. So you know what I mean by that? Like, I'm not even sure it's a great development tool, to be perfectly frank.
Right. Okay. So let's go through period one here, and then we can kind of break it down, like, one, holistically talk about period one, venues, race format, and then men and women.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a really traditional start to the season. And, you know, we talked earlier about how many races there are this year, but period one to the World Cup is like every other year, whether there's championship or not. It's not too much racing in period one. It's a good mix of different formats and different races, which is good. I also think, like, having the relay back in Lillehammer, to have a relay to start the year, it's a great way to start a season and build some excitement. And you said it yourself. I mean, how exciting was that women's relay at World Championships? It was amazing. And to have a race like that early in the year, that's great. So I think it's a good mix of races for sure. I mean, the sprint weekend, Planitza, is it worth doing a sprint weekend like that just before the Tour de Ski? In some ways, yes, it gives athletes that are focusing on the Tour de Ski overall a chance to train and skip that weekend, and gives the sprinters one more real good effort before the Tour de Ski happens. Well, they do a few stages here and there, so I mean, that is good in a way, but it's a good mix. I mean, there won't be that many surprises in period one. There never is. But everyone just comes in firing on all cylinders, because those big teams, if you want to stay on the World Cup, then you have to come out of guns a blazing, or you'll be replaced. And so look to the big teams like Russia and Norway to start the season off, and the women's team in Sweden, which is just so exciting. I'm really looking forward to following the women's side of things. Sweden has had just such explosive growth now, and with Frida Karlsson coming online in the distance events now, when you combine that with the five or six sprinters that Sweden has, their depth is amazing on the Scandinavian Cup circuit as well. Like, they're just destroying the Norwegian women on the Scandinavian Cup side. So they have some other ones in the wings, and I think a season like this with no championship, it'll be really, really fun to see how Sweden progresses. It's going to be good on the women's side from the depth perspective, but at the same time, Tereza Johaug's going to win every distance race this year again. So
you think so?
She's a cut above. I mean,
I mean, I think it was a 5K, like the Norwegian track championships.
And yeah, she the 10,000.
Oh, the 10,000. Yeah, in like Hokas or something.
32:20. Yeah, 32:20s. 32:20, like heel striking in like the biggest pair of Hoka trainers. It was like, that's the level. So if you're worried about, if you want to know what the capacity needs to be to compete in the women's side of things, it's 32:20 by yourself in Hoka training shoes. And you know what she did that morning? 2 hours of double pull.
Oh, you're kidding.
The morning of the where she ran 32:20 that evening, 32:21 that evening, in the morning she did 2 hours of double pulling. And the day before she did a 3.5 hour run with her brother. She's a beast.
She is a beast, and she's served a doping penalty. So there is that sort of speculation from people. Yeah, like you said, she's a beast, and that's the bottom line.
Oh, yeah, yeah. She is a once in a generation talent. And I mean, they don't come around all that often. And in sport, sometimes you almost get conditioned that, like, oh yeah, like, great athletes are dominant. But if you think of tennis, if we're living through, like, in tennis, I mean, Roger Federer and Nadal, I mean, go back 100 years of tennis. There's been some amazing champions. You have Bjorn Borg, you have McEnroe, you have, there's so many. Agassi, Sampras, I mean, Rod Laver, like, so many. But you know what? These two tennis players, those two guys, like Nadal and Federer, were totally, it's kind of blasé. It's like, of course, they're making another final. Oh, yeah, they're winning a Grand Slam here and there. But, like, no. These are the best tennis players that ever lived. and this is Tereza.
Right.
I mean, Tereza
right.
is in the conversation for the best cross-country skier, man or woman, to ever live. I mean, Mara Bjørgen has that crown now. But, I mean, Tereza is really, really, like, at an extreme level of professionalism and delivery and training and capacity. And, yeah, she's just at a... She's just at a level that it's unbelievable, but it's hard work, and it's really impressive the way she does it. So, I mean, the women have their work cut out for them if they want to win in distance skiing.
Sure. And let's go back a little bit to the Swedish women. And I spoke to Ida Ingemar's daughter earlier in the week, but we were discussing kind of that transformation, how all of a sudden it was like, they are a power, and not only a power, but like they're making a statement at world championships in the relay that they can string together, you know, four athletes and arguably the best sprinter in the world doing the anchor leg and compete with Johaug. What do you see from Sweden specifically, or maybe any specific athlete, and maybe it's Stina taking the sprint globe again? Yeah. Who are you looking for?
For sure. I mean, like Stina, but Dahlqvist too, you know, like Maja Dahlqvist had a great season last year in the sprints. Sundling too was great. Yeah, Stina probably should win the sprint globe barring something crazy. I think Stina is just so consistent. But I'm really excited to see what Frida Karlsson can do. I mean, like what Frida did at the World Championships, like two individual medals. Yeah, she's a junior,
right?
Like,
yep.
The last time that's happened was Teresa. She won a bronze medal in Sapporo when she was a junior in a distance event. And quite frankly, I mean, what Frida did at the World Championships last year was like unheralded. It was amazing. So, I mean, it'll be really fun to see her first year in the World Cup and see if she can compete with the real chiefs of the, or like the real beasts of the women's side. I mean, Ingveld and Teresa proved to be almost untouchable last year in distance races. So it'll be really fun to have Stina in, to have Frida in there. So that's the kind of depth I think that's really fun to watch. It's like you have athletes from Sweden, from the women's side, you have like legitimate medal, not just threats, but like expected medals in distance and in sprint every single weekend all year long on the women's side. Like, that's exciting. That's going to be great.
Any thoughts on the American team? I mean, I know obviously Jesse won the gold medal in the team sprint in 2018, and she had a gajillion obligations, which I don't blame her for, you know, fulfilling and taking advantage of, but that takes its toll. And she still had a great season, but
oh yeah, really great season.
Yeah, and you think about—I mean, I guess we can get to Canada in a bit and talk about that.
We have to.
But we don't mean up to you.
No, we can. Of course, we can. Of course, we can.
You've got you know, Rosie Brennan coming off a great year, Jesse Diggins, Sadie Bjornsson, Sophie Caldwell. You know, some depth there as well.
Oh yeah, no, the Americans, the American women have just been—I mean, they've been. They've been just such a great story, and you have to tip your hat to what a great, I mean, everything looks rosy in hindsight, of course, but I was around when they were trying to build that culture, and I mean, it really started long, long ago, and you have to really tip your hat to a guy like Pete Vordenberg for getting building off like what Trond was doing, and when he was there, and Pete really went like all in, and I mean, Pete Vordenberg did such a great job of like building a system, and I mean it cost him this. I mean he stepped away for other reasons as well, but like, I mean, it was energy intensive to do that. I mean, he burnt out a bit, but then you have guys like Grover has been there the whole time, who's done just an amazing job of keeping a level head and steady and passionate the whole way through. And then Matt Whitcomb, I mean, Jesus, that's Matt's coach of the century. I mean, like the dedication, like people just have no concept of what the dedication that Matt Whitcomb has done for US skiing. Because like there's years that he takes like 10 days off for a year. And it's one thing to find someone that's hardworking. It's another thing to find someone that's hardworking, talented, and capable. And Matt, it encompasses all those things. And I mean, of course, at the end, everything. Matt is, give him all the accolades. He deserves so many accolades. Just like guys like, I mean, if you want to look like Eric Flora too, you tip your hat to Eric Flora for building such a great club program that delivers season after season after season after season. Like, these are, US has some really, really quality programs, but I, like, if we just stick with the US ski team, I really think it's the foundational shift that happened. Tron kind of like started the ball rolling, and Pete really took that ball and just sprinted till his legs just completely stopped working, and it burnt him right out. And then guys like Matt and Grover and those kind of guys like were just, they've just done such a phenomenal, and Fish too. Look what Fish has done on the development side of things. So they're doing a lot of things right from the coaching standpoint. And when that coincides with some really great talents that come through the program, like the Sophies and the Jessies, they would succeed, and Sadie, you know, they're those kind of talents are going to succeed pretty much whoever is running it, but not week in, week out like they're doing now. So it's really, really exciting on the women's side. And of course, Jessie, yeah, sure. You know, there was a lot of talk that she took a lot of, you know, that she took a lot on after the Olympics and this, that, and the other. But you know what? She's also the kind of person that takes a lot of energy from that. She gets a lot of energy back from that. She loves being out there. She loves putting herself out there. You know, I know she was really disappointed she didn't get a medal, but go back and look at that fourth place finish she had in Seyfeld, because it was a beautiful race. It was a gutsy performance. And, you know, some days you're fourth. Sorry, that's how it is. But if you're fourth in the 30K against some skiers like that, and then, you know, Jessie was not expecting that a junior was going to be having the week of her life, you know, take the junior out of there and she's third. So in the 30K, not in the sprint, like in the 30. So I mean, for sure, it's going to be really exciting. The U.S. women have just been such an amazing storyline the last, I mean, it's going on like 6-7 years now, like with the whole team, I'm saying. And yeah, it's so, of course, I'm thrilled to cheer them on. I can't wait to see how that plays out. But I mean, you can expect, it's not even putting pressure on them at this point. I mean, like you can expect podium finishes this year, like every year.
So that does, I mean, one of the things that resonated with me when you were talking about were these kind of selfless, you know, essentially burning all of their energy. And you brought up, you know, Pete Vordenberg as an example. And I know, like, right, like Pete, he takes it to the limit. Well, it begs the question for me. It's like, okay, so I know that Canada has had a little bit of a revolving door, being gentle here. And so who's that person?
Yeah, it's a good question.
There's a funding issue, but you know, who's that?
Yeah, but that's the thing. There was a funding issue in the US too. I mean, Pete was making no money. Matt made no money. He probably still makes no money. Like, I mean, like so it's not just funding, but Canada's been tricky, but we also went through the same similar kind of thing. I mean, you know, you can say what you want about Dave Wood, but he did an amazing job while he was with the skills he had. I mean, like he built a great program with nothing, and it was in that kind of like, I'm going to just go burn myself out essentially. Like there's no days off. It's what I do. And that's what he did. And then Justin too, for a few years there. I mean, like Justin like was a haggard, ragged, like really ragged. And the reason he was like that is because he was working like 18 hours a day and being a dad and being like, I mean, he went full gas. The problem has been maybe perhaps, it's hard to know what everything is, but it's just like you don't have a good support crew. I mean, Pete, even though he was like that as well, like working crazy hard and going like all in, he also had Matt there who was also going all in with him, and Grover who is also like going deep. And whereas like in Canada, like who did Justin have beside him going that level of hard? Nobody. Or, you know, Louis for sure. But Louis is had a lot to do in the east of Canada, and Canada's a big country too. So it's but it's, yeah, it's I don't know. It's not a great situation in Canada, but I think right now, like Eric Broughton, the young Norwegian that they brought over there, I really have high hopes for him. He's really passionate and he's really driven, and he's going to bring a new energy, and he's committed. He's not like some of the other Norwegian coaches, which I all thought were great personally. I thought the Norwegian coaches we've had have been great. We had a administration issue that was some major disconnect there. But from Broughton's, Eric Broughton's perspective, I mean, he's living in Camor. He's living there. He's not flying back and forth. Like he lives in Canada. So, and he's young, He's really excited and he's committed. And also Joel Jakes, who's taken on the interim or like the high performance manager position right now. I mean, you're going to be hard pressed to find a guy that works harder than Joel and is more passionate about cross country skiing. And he comes with a huge depth of experience from being a technician at the show for a decade. So I mean, I think they're definitely in a rebuilding phase, but they have to go back and look at the blueprint and maybe, you know, if either tweak the blueprint or start drawing new blueprints but then having some continuity there. And I think that's, if you want to compare the American system to the Canadian system in that, like, I think it's been really, really great to see what that blueprint. Yeah, Justin was involved in that too, but like Grover, Justin, Pete, Matt, Pat Casey was there for a brief time too. I mean, like that blueprint that was put together and like toiled with is still being progressed now, right? They're tweaking it. You have to tweak that. You can't just be complacent, because then as soon as you be complacent in high level sport, we've seen that movie, you know what happens. But I think Canada just needs to really, really think about putting together some sort of like blueprint and spending the time and then you just got to cross your fingers that, and I have high faith that Broughton can be that kind of guy that carries that, and Joel together, like those two together can really carry that forward. But what's hard is like, it's hard for Joel. It's hard for Eric to do that kind of big picture thinking and planning, and also just like bail the boat from water. You know what I mean? It's one thing to plan a big, beautiful boat, but if you are trying to plan the boat while you're floating on the ocean and it's all just a bunch of logs, you know, somebody has to use the twine to keep the logs together so the raft doesn't sink. Because what good's the plan if you're in the bottom of the sea?
Right. Okay, so let's think about the guys side a bit. I'm looking at the overall here from last season, and we're looking, you know, it's in the top six, five Norwegians, the top eight, you throw in, you know, there's a Russian who was second, Bolshinov was second overall, but you got a couple of Italians in seventh and eighth, Sundby, a Norwegian, and Ustigoff, who was 10th. So let's start near the bottom. I'm kind of curious. It sounds like Sundby is still committed to the sport.
Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure. I mean, Sundby is, man, he's an Ironman. Like, he's another one of those guys that can just handle just like an insane amount of training, and he brings a level of intensity to everything he does that is... No one would describe Sunby as chill. Sunby's no chill. So he's intense, and he's an intense guy, and he's passionate and committed. And, you know, but I see him more now, to be honest, as like he'll come up for a few races of the year. And I wouldn't be surprised if he wins a race or two in the winter. But I think the years of seeing him dominant on the overall stage, those are done. Sport keeps evolving, and how Klebo and Bolshinov win the overall now or compete for the overall. I mean, Sundby just doesn't stand a chance for taking a globe anymore. His time has passed, and what a time it has been, because it's been amazing. And you saw last year, world champion in the 15K, so he still has the ability to win races. And absolutely, he's a threat to win any distance race. But week in, week out, chasing the points, not going to happen for Sundby for the overall. No.
Are we still looking at a year in your eyes where, yeah, it is a Klebo Bolshinov show where, you know, I'm just looking here. Klebo won the overall. He was ranked 9th in the distance standings and 1st in sprint. But obviously, you know, points wise was tops. And Bolshinov 100 points behind overall, but 1st in distance and 2nd in sprint. So you see a flip-flop at all there?
It'll be really interesting to me. I mean, Bolshinov is, that was quite the little season he put together last year. And if it wasn't for just the utter dominance of Klebo sprinting, both tactically and physically, I mean, you got to think there's going to be a time that, uh, that he, that he competes, that he's going to take. He will win a globe. Bolshunov's going to win a globe one day. I mean, it's just a matter of when. And I think the storyline for me with Klebo is, you know, he went up to the distance team this year. And there's a lot of guys on the all-around guys, they're called in the Norwegian team. And the sprint team has had a lot of great success of nurturing champions. I mean, like, Finn has thrived under the sprint team. Klebo has won the overall the last 2 years in the sprint globe, his first year on the sprint team. So this change of going up to the distance, the all-around team, it'll be interesting. I mean, I understand he wants to improve his distance skiing. A couple of years ago, he was very strong in distance. Last year, not quite as strong as he has been. And he sees that. He sees Bolshunov coming, and he sees the future too. And he wants to win gold medals in the distance races too at the championships, and keep competing for the overall. And so he feels like he has to adapt. But it's the all around team for Norway is those guys have really high capacity. And you saw what happened to Finn Hagen Krogh going up to the distance team, or the all-around team. I keep calling it the distance team. That's my bad. And just getting like shattered. So you had a guy that was second in the Tour de Ski and won the sprint globe and was like a darling of Lahti, goes to the all-around team and then is nowhere, you know? So I hope the same fate doesn't happen to Klebo. I don't think it will, but at the same time, is he going to get that boost right out of the gun like he's hoping for? Yeah, let's see. I mean, I'm not so sure, but because he is already at such a high level. And then Bolshunov, I mean, Bolshunov is just he's crazy. I mean, what can you say? Like, he, you know, everyone says Klebo, 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 but look what Bolshunov did at Holmenkollen. And like, even the way he got second in the 50K in Seefeld, or what. Yeah, just like then Pyeongchang, he was really strong too. I mean, his day will come, and it's going to come soon. I mean, will it be this year? Hard to say. Klebo is just so dominant in sprinting, and Bolshunov doesn't have a chance against Klebo in skate sprints. Like, sit down, no way. And, you know, when you're so dominant in sprints like Klebo is, that helps you win overalls. That helps you win globes. So it'll be a really fun fight, I think. I mean, the Norwegians are going to dominate. The Norwegians are going to dominate the men's side. That's just how it is.
Well, I appreciate your time. Any other thoughts?
No, I'm really excited. It'll be fun. It's always fun to get the season going and watch it. And I still follow the sport closely and pretty involved with it. So it's a beautiful sport. It really is. And I hope we can have some surprises in Canada. I really do. There's some, you know, I guess my last thought is like Emily Nishikawa has been training well this year, and she had some good races last year as well, so it'd be fun. And we have got some juniors, some young junior men, and it's hard to get too crazy excited because they're so young, but we have like Remy Drolet and Tom Steven and Zav McKeever, and I mean there's some guys in the wings there that, like, I mean, maybe not this year, maybe not 3 years from now, but in like 5-6 years it could be another wave coming through the system. So it's been really fun to cheer them on.
Well, thanks for taking the time, really appreciate it.
Yeah, no, thanks a lot. Bye.
Thanks for listening, and remember, Craftsbury has 25K open for skiing.